Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Sheldon Nidal, who is very closely connected with the activities of the Galactic Federation. He has regular contact with certain space friends who are very much involved in the Prosperity Program's First Contact and Our Path to Ascension. Are you there, Sheldon?
Hello, Mike. I'm here.
Can you hear me? Nice and clear. Thank you very much.
Great.
Can I just say to you at the start here, before we really get into the program, that I did get an email from a friend of yours, Keith McCartney.
Right.
He sends his regards. He wanted to say hello, and he hoped you and Colleen were comfortable, as he says here, in the Sacramento area.
Right. Well, tell him that we are, and thanks him very much for all he's done to help us, and we really appreciate his aid and everything to keep this thing going called the Planetary Activation Organization, First Contact.
That's great, yes. I'm sure he's listening in, but as he sent me the email on that, I thought I would pass on his message to you. Can I start with talking about your message of this particular week?
Sure.
You mentioned in that there are moves paving the way for delivery. So what I wanted to ask you is, what is the nature of the support that we will get that will enable that to take place? And can you confirm something that's often puzzled me as to where the funds actually come from?
Okay, number one, what they're going to be doing is they are basically backing up what the Earth allies are doing to get us to the, to the finish of this crazy game. And they are all very, very close. That's all we can really say about, because a lot of things are happening. It has to do with getting people, you might say, to be obscure about it, get people out of the way and get people into a position where they're able to finally finish this thing off and also to take down this particular crazy government here on this side of the Atlantic than the American government.
Yes,
now, as for number two, what about the funds? What is the origin of those? Is this mainly from the original St. Germain World Trust, and then it was added to in the 70s and the 80s by people doing what's called money trading, where they trade in different currencies. And this is the second thing that was a part of this process. So the funds are real, and the problem, though, has been that the present government, the regime in the United States, has basically been against it from the beginning. And so until they're out of the way, really nothing is going to really happen that I know of.
Right, okay. But I think at one time, and I have a feeling it must have been hinted at in one of your recent messages, it seemed to suggest that the prosperity funds would start to be delivered prior to that. Now, am I correct or am I mistaken on that?
Well, there's a part of the prosperity funds which is actually called the claims, which deals with the original farm claims movement that started in the 70s and 80s. And that's the one that really gets rid of this government. And then after that's done, then the rest of the monetary treasures or whatever you want to call them come down the road. So there's actually kind of a 1-2-3 punch here. The first punch hasn't quite gotten there yet, but it's close.
Okay, well, that settled that one. So it starts beforehand, but really the big thing happens afterwards.
Right.
You talk in some of the messages about announcements that are likely to be made. Is it known at this stage who those announcements will come through? In other words, will it come, say, for example, through the Syrians, or will they do it via some government official?
Well, the initial government decisions, as far as the announcement goes, will be the officials of the interim or caretaker regime that will take over after these crazy people in Washington are gone. So that's the important part of that as far as that goes.
Yes. I mean, because one imagines once the coast is clear, as you might say, that the space people will want to really come and present themselves to us and show themselves at the same time.
Well, they will become much more shall we say, open about what they do, because then the protocols that the present government has set up about firing at them or trying to do aggressive acts against them will be gone.
Yeah.
So they don't have to worry about something looking the wrong way than it really is, because people don't know the full story of why something happened. So they want to make sure that nothing that could cause a difficulty in how people conceive of who and what they are is changed from the truth by somebody doing something, as they used to say in the game, doing something stupid. So.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. One final question related to this week's message. There was a part in there that spoke of perceptions being moved into position in our reality grid, and it was said that that would inspire others to join them or allow souls to incarnate there.
Right.
What would be the purpose of that when we have so little time left?
Well, what's happening is there are a lot of souls coming into this planet or are waiting to come in that are starseeds. And these are the crystal children, etc., who want to come here, either walking in or else through birth, and allow themselves to be part of this whole process of change. Because the more people who are in charge of making things positive in how the new grids are put together, is really helps make the final transformation into the new reality a lot easier.
Right. Now, in both your messages and on one of your DVDs, you talk of this early period, that is the delivery of the funds, replacing the government, and bringing peace, and then you go on to talk about replacing the Federal Reserve and the Inland Revenue. Now, if I read this correctly, all this is going to happen in about 8 days, is that correct?
That's right. There'll be announcements. That's why I said the first part will be governmental announcements, and they'll be doing basically four things. They'll first of all announce who they are and why they're there and that they're a transitional government. Secondly, they will announce the debt forgiveness. Third, they'll announce the ending of all income taxes in this country. And then they'll talk about the new currency and the new banking act, which ends the Federal Reserve, which is illegal anyway. It's the only really large-scale private central bank in the world, and it'd be replaced with a real central bank, which will be run out of the Department of Treasury.
Yeah. Right. That's brilliant. I mean, I think this is what everybody is hoping, that once we can get started, it really gets cracking and moving on. I have one or two email questions that have already arrived, knowing that you were coming on, and there is one that refers back to what you said in December in LA. You said then, or intimated then, that the prosperity funds would happen between Christmas and about mid-January. Now, that evidently has been put off. What is the latest take on that as far as the timing?
Well, they've just put it down into soon, because what has been happening is every time it's about to go down the pipeline and the process has been taken care of in their minds, some little final glitch happens, which wasn't expected, which suddenly puts everything back on hold. So that is what happened. It was supposed to originally been a New Year's gift, but it didn't happen. So because of that, what I just talked about, namely that there's a glitch that occurs at the last second, and that's been happening on and off. So right now there's a lot of things going on in both Washington and in other related places which I can't really talk about that much. I hate to sound so secretive, but it has to be right now because of the security.
And
what is happening is we are just about finished, and hopefully in the next few weeks, if it all continues to come down, something just might happen. So cross our fingers and pray hard.
Yeah, I think that's encouraging. I'm pleased to hear that one, Sheldon. Okay, so all that is imminent. I'm sure we can wait a few more weeks for that. In that same talk in December in LA, you mentioned details about the suppressed technologies being released. Apparently, I mean, I wasn't at your conference, but you mentioned teleporters, holographic communicators, healing chambers of sonic light and sound, and free and clean energy devices. Is there any time frame for those? I mean, will that happen over a longer period?
Now, once the original roadblock, which of course is the present U.S. regime, is gone, then the interim government we're talking about can do this pretty quickly. I think within a matter of a week or two, people will probably be getting announcements about these devices and a schedule that they will have worked out on when they can be introduced and how they'll be introduced.
Right. So is all this equipment already being held on the motherships?
It's really, a lot of this is hidden technology that the U.S. government and a lot of other major governments have had access to for decades.
And I mean, so when they talk of healing chambers, are you saying then that they would be built here on Earth?
Right, they already have things like that down in the underground bases. The amount of technology that the U.S. government or the secret government, whatever you want to call it, has in its underground bases around the world is ridiculous. It's stuff that it would be released would change medicine. We wouldn't have to worry about any major diseases anymore. They would help us to understand how to get around much faster because we would be able to literally zip from one place to another by beaming from point A to point B. We would have all kinds of other technologies. We'd have megaliths, which is anti-magnetic transports that could carry any kind of thing you wanted, any kind of material from point A to point B, and not in the matter of days or large amounts of hours, but a couple of hours anywhere on the planet. So this stuff is there. I mean, flying discs and other things related to it, and it also includes the power source we're talking about. You have an unlimited free energy power sources that they could release. It would solve all the energy. The oil crisis would be over probably in a matter of months, which is probably how long it would take to get out to people. And that would be gone. Also, the problems about aircraft would be gone because when these craft crash into one another most of the time, nothing really serious happens. They bounce off one another. If they do crash, it's usually not too serious. It's usually people walk away with no problem. So the problems that we now have with aviation, the difficulties that we are having, especially here in the States, about air traffic controllers, et cetera, and all that stuff, would be gone. And the other thing is, just about anything you want to think of that's a problem or a difficulty on this planet at this time, from power to the problem of needing to recycle all kinds of waste to the problem of pollution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It'll be solved almost instantly. It'll just be a matter of the time needed to manufacture devices and distribute them.
Right. That's wonderfully encouraging. Again, another question relating to a subject I think that you brought up before. Somebody's asking if you know now what the value of the new rainbow dollar will be in relation to the Federal Reserve dollar.
Well, they're originally going to use it as a quid pro quid because that's the easiest way to do it, even though it would be technically because it's a hard currency. And with gold at $1,000 an ounce U.S., it would be much, much more. But that we don't have to worry about right now because they want to just get it distributed initially. So it'll be one for one, 10 for 10 or whatever.
Yeah. Now, for quite a long time, there have been reports floating around saying that the new rainbow currency has been already delivered to the banks. Is that correct?
I have a feeling it may not be because they've had to do a lot of things with it since a lot of people reported that. That may have been done a little while ago, like a year ago, but I don't think it's happened right now because of all the changes that have happened in the last year.
Yeah.
So I would, I will give an informed guess and say no.
Right. I bet your guess is probably nearer accurate than anybody else's. Right. Really a final question here relating to that conference or seminar that someone was present at. They're asking, will there be any meetings with any of the Galactic Federation personnel with light workers before first contact actually takes place?
Some selected people may, on one of the scenarios, may be allowed to have actual complete contact. What will happen and how things go depends, of course, what comes down the pike when this thing actually starts to happen. So I will say there's a possibility and leave it at that.
Right, okay. That's fine. I've got a little rows of questions here lined up for you. Right, I'm looking here. apparently, now I'm sort of jumping forward to the time when we're clearly going to be well prepared for ascension, and there's some intimation that it will take 2 days to fully activate our DNA. And I think you said at the time that we would end up in that event looking about 25 years old.
Right, yeah, 20 to 25. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, did you get that?
Yeah, I got that. Well, yeah, well, once we finish our metamorphosis, we'll be fully conscious beings, so we will have regenerated ourselves into looking like when we were a lot younger. And included with that, we will also have some differences, which is our eyes will be a lot bigger because we'll be taking in more energy, and other little minor changes, size of our ears and where exactly where they are on the side of the face. Be slight differences probably, but that'll be it. You really won't notice much of anything, probably except for the eyes.
Right.
Of course, you'll be a lot taller also, but...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that will be a rather strange experience, I guess, to see or sense that oneself is somewhat different. But it would be nice to be 25 again.
It sure would. We both know that.
Yes, indeed. Now, there was a talk at some times that the metamorphosis, and I think I've got this right, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, would take place within a relatively short time after first contact. Can you put that into context in a sort of time?
Well, they're talking about probably about 4 to 6 months after contact will happen.
Yeah. Well, that's very quick, isn't it?
To me, that's like lightning when people don't realize how fast 4 to 6 months can go by. I mean, I've been at this place less than that, and it seems like I just came here yesterday, so I understand how quick that is.
Yeah. So does that read correctly that in the last few years, which I assume will take us up to 2012, we will already have established a position where we will already have full consciousness?
What was that at the end?
Yeah. Does that interpretation of that mean that the last few years we spend on the Earth, that is leading up to 2012, when I believe it's generally accepted as being the ascension period, that we will have already reached full consciousness on the Earth?
That's right. We should have way before 2012 if all goes as is planned right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And I rather suspect that it's not that long off, so... I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, aren't we all? Yeah. Well, most of us, anyway. Yeah. Just a thought dropped into my mind, Sheldon, talking about the funds. Has this Wantagate fund anything to do with that?
No, it has nothing to do with it.
It hasn't?
No, it is. It's a thing that is something that's being helped, but it's not really a part of these funds, because the one's based on the World Trust and the other one's based upon something out of the U.S. Treasury initially.
Right.
It's a whole different game.
But presumably, when that is recovered, it would go into the pool, as one might say.
Well, it'll go into whatever the fund is that person has, and what he was instructed to do will then happen. So he's kind of independent of the whole game right now. Funds we're talking about are there, and then there's this Wanta thing. So it's actually two different things.
Right, that's brilliant. Okay. I'd like to jump onto a different subject now regarding your visit to the inner Earth. You said you covered it all very quickly, but did it leave you with much impression as to what it is like?
As far as impressions, every time you go down there, the first thing you will feel is that it's so much more beautiful than the place up here, which we're used to.
Yeah.
And when you see the cities, they are incredible because there's these flashing color, multicolored crystals. And everything there is so gorgeous. I mean, the trees are really vibrant. The grasses are vibrant. The bushes are vibrant. The forests seem bigger. It's just beautiful. And, of course, the sun is a little different. You have this like diffuse light sun, so the shadows are not as strong as they are here on the surface world. That's the first difference that you notice, that the shadows are kind of more diffuse and not as deep. But the same thing could be said sometimes on a cloudy day here on this planet, so on the surface world.
Right.
So as far as the impressions that I had of it, the impression I had of it was, it's a really neat place. I wouldn't mind staying there. It's beautiful.
Wonderful. Is it on a vibrational level that if, say, I was to go into there, would I be able to see all this without having my own vibrations raised? In other words, is it invisible to people unless you are of a slightly higher vibration?
No. I was not of that, so I enjoyed it thoroughly. Anybody, if figure out a way to get through the tunnels and get down there, they're down there. And
yeah.
So you are there, you see everything around you, you'll see the crystal cities. So I would say that is not the case,
right,
from all that I know.
Yeah, I think these are the sort of questions that perhaps people ask themselves about it. Now, I believe you may have been hinting at what the people in the inner Earth do by talking about our own preparations. And you mentioned, for example, that we would meditate for about an hour a day in place of sleep.
Right.
So is this indeed correct that they...
Right. They have what they call a resting meditation. They will lie down on like a bed for about an hour, and they go into a deep resting meditation, and they rejuvenate themselves, and then they get up and go to work for the other 23 hours.
Yeah. Oh, that might not go down so well.
And the place is pretty comfortable. I mean, you get in one of their beds, it adjusts to you exactly... And it's almost impossible not to fall asleep. It's just so comfortable. Your brain just goes, oh, my God, let me enjoy this. And the next thing you know, you're asleep.
That's lovely, yeah. And I've no doubt the energy there is very relaxing and inducive to sleep, and you feel peaceful anyway.
Right, you do. You feel peaceful. You feel totally regenerated. So the place is just full of all this amazing energy because all the people there are constantly doing rituals and ceremonies and meditating.
Yeah.
So the result is, it's like going into one of the highest energy ashrams you could possibly think of, and the whole world, whole inner world of our planet is like that. So it's just amazing.
Yeah, place. Yeah. Is it actually 100% correct to say that the beings of the inner Earth are those who went underground at the time Lemuria broke up, or are there other types of entities there?
Well, pretty much these are the groups that decided to not leave after Atlantis was destroyed, and originally the group, as you said, from Lemuria. So
yeah.
Lemuria actually was an inner Earth place and an outer Earth place, and the outer Earth place was destroyed, and then the inner Earth place took over for it. And so they have a tradition that goes, you know, almost back a million years as far as civilization. So they constantly view upon us as being the people that are their cousins, their brothers and sisters, and they are very, very protective of us. And they, as a matter of fact, a lot of the guardian angels and other groups of angelics that you have around them are really not angels. They're people from inner Earth. So we have to realize that they are watching us all the time. I mean, I get in contact with people from inner Earth all the time on a spiritual level almost every day.
Yes. Are they, the beings themselves and their environment, very similar to what you experience on board the motherships?
Very similar. The energies on the Syrian ship, to me, because I'm kind of prejudiced about that, were a little bit higher, but they were very high vibration, very high vibration.
Yes, yes. So it's sort of home to home for them, then, in a manner of speaking.
Yes, it is. That's why the Syrians and the other groups of Galactic Federation personnel that are part of the First Contact fleet that hang out all the time at the headquarters near the capital city of Agartha, which is what the inner Earth place is called, consider Shambhala and everything around it to be similar or almost the same as the ship in the Federation base. So they consider it interchangeable. And since I'm not of that energy, but I was just experiencing it all, I can say from my viewpoint they are absolutely correct.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's interesting. Now, I've been having a little read of your book, one that really I find very interesting. I mean, they all are, but I'm particularly taken by your book called Your First Contact. And you mention in there your contact, who was called Washtar. I believe he was your first one. Do
right,
you still
he was...
have some... Yeah? I was going to ask
he's
you, do
a,
you still have contact now?
I get in contact with him every so often. Most of the time, he is a Senate Master of the Syrian system, and every so often, he interacts with Senate Masters here, and then I get to talk to him.
Right. Okay. Because I think he was actually your guide then in that event.
Right. He was the person who took me through my childhood and then got me back to work, so to speak, in the late 1960s. I mean, late
1980s. Right.
Late 1980s.
Okay.
1980s. I'll get it right yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And is it true that you are actually, shall we say, connected to a Syrian computer and that they follow all your activities, what is happening to you, and so forth?
Right. Yeah. They have me linked up all the time. So.
They do, yes. So I guess you're actually protected by that as well.
Right. Anytime anything happens to me, I always get an increase in contact. So I'd say yes.
Does it work the other way? Can you contact them through that link?
Yes, I can. I do all the time. I have conversations with them all the time.
Oh, you do? Right. Ah, dear me. Right. When you went on board one of the ships, you described it as one of your most enjoyable field trips, and you spoke of these mind-boggling sizes, where you mentioned one mothership that had three large interconnected rooms, telepathic contact with computers, geology labs, holographic monitors. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I describe it in detail in the latest DVD I've got, which is the tour of the Syrian mothership, but the first thing that you figure out in your mind is that how advanced this technology is when you see the sizes they're dealing with. Like in the geology lab where they're studying the Earth, they have a holographic image that's a sphere, an exact copy of the Earth that is 1 mile across.
Isn't
and you sit
right?
there and you watch this thing being floating above your head, this huge globe, and it's
right.
exact down to the millimeter replica of the planet. So if anything's happening on the planet, you'll see things happening on this scale model. And they have all kinds of devices that they use to monitor and bring in data all the time from the different ships and also from the robot probes that are constantly checking on this planet and upon us. And so you see all of this happening when you're there all the time in the geology lab. And all the other labs are like that. I mean, when you have this amazing, it's like the world's most advanced science museum. It is interactive and everything. It is just unbelievable. And so I enjoyed that thoroughly. Whenever they would allow me to stay for any period of time, I was in heaven, so to speak. I just enjoyed it. That's
well,
my
I'm
background.
Not surprised. Well,
I was just like, oh my God, that was my Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you were interested in science, weren't you, at an early age? And I loved the story of when you worked in a lab, I think, as the lad. You did all the odd jobs, and you could actually telepathically listen in to what they were thinking as well as hearing their conversations.
Right. I could do that, and I did something which I thought was going to be amazingly helpful, but turned out to be a stupid decision on my part, which was rather naive. I actually tried to communicate with them and help them out, and when they saw I was a kid, I got fired.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did. I mean, that was one of the things that made me want to move away from this when I was in my mid-teens, is because I saw this world as being totally unready for what I was, and so I wanted to kind of blend in, which was I now see it was really dumb, but that's what I wanted to do because I was just a kid back then, you know, just 15 years old. And the process that I had in my head was that this is not working. I have to get rid of this. And now that I'm an adult, some of the stuff that I could do when I was a kid I can't do anymore. So I feel like I really did something stupid.
Oh, well, I'm sure it wasn't really, but I suppose the people who you telepathically impress with your thoughts weren't ready for it.
No, they weren't. As a matter of fact, once I tried to help this kid out in a test, and the fact finally that we were in opposite ends of the room kept me from being suspended.
Oh, dear me. I bet you've got plenty of stories like that.
I got lots of crazy stories like that because they're all true.
Yeah, I bet you have. But coming back to these massive motherships, I think I've got my own ideas and little bits of information about them, but I was quite astounded to read in your book, Your First Contact, that in the larger ones, they actually replicate things like moonlit skies, and you have steep hills, and they have bridges over streams. I mean, that really is amazing.
Yeah, they can do just about anything with the... Their holographic technology has reached the point where they can not only reproduce something, but they can reproduce it so that it's an exact replica, and it's just as strong or as long as the original. So it's it's amazing what... You look at this technology, and you, of course, you know it's millions of years ahead of us, but even so, you are amazed. Of course, as one guy said once long ago, I forgot his name exactly right now, he just simply said the magic of today is really the science of tomorrow. So that's really what it is. Yeah. It's like utter magic. You know, people disappearing, people walking through walls, people in a blink. They can build an entire town in a blink.
Great.
I mean, they can take an entire town away in a blink. I mean, it's just...
Oh, yes. Well, that does go, doesn't it, some way towards explaining possibly how they can restore the Earth in such a short period of time.
Right. They have this incredible technology which they can tap into the actual energies of the Earth, in other words, its past memories, her past memories, and reproduce them. This technology that they have is just, it's beyond magic. It's almost like fantasy, but it's real. And that's the thing that I really liked about all this technology, was that it was so much what you would expect people who were very advanced in consciousness and very, very advanced in the whole concept of who and what they are, in other words, they knew who they were, they would be beyond the whole concept of wars and competition, etc., and they would be into using their technology to better a planet they were on or to better a planet they were visiting, and they had received from the local hierarchy the permission to go ahead and do something about what was happening on there. So they could... Their technology is everything. They can make even planets appear and disappear. I mean, the technology is unbelievable. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I'm glad we've got friends like that. You go on in your book to talk about the Arcturians, who you said were perhaps some of the most interesting beings, and the Andromedans, who were very Earth-like in appearance, who you said had a great spiritual knowledge. How many other types of beings did you meet?
I've met lots of beings, because one of the things that Washita did with me was, he said, my job eventually would be to be an ambassador, and so you have to meet what we can show you. And so they showed me a lot. I've seen all kinds of beings, big beings, small beings, in-between-sized beings. Some of them look scary, even though they have a very loving energy around them. You still, the way they look, you have these old concepts within your brain from your childhood, because I watched a lot of horror movies and monster movies when I was a kid. And so I right away go, gulp. But then they would just come back with the loving energy and you'd get over it. But the initial first 10-second impression, I always found that fascinating.
Yes, yes. Did you ever meet one of the types that were described as appearing like a praying mantis?
Right, right. They're one of the most advanced civilizations or societies in the entire galaxy, and so
really, yeah,
they're incredible beings. I mean, you have to realize that beyond the concept of humans, etc., being everything, there are incredibly intelligent species across the galaxy of all different kinds of beings, and that they are really beautiful beings. And like I said, when you see when you see insects that are that big, even though they're loving and caring beings, it's still, you get the initial feeling from that first 10 seconds I was talking about. And then you feel their heart energies and their spirit energies, and it kind of doesn't fit. And then you just get over it, so to speak. You just let it go, all this fear and upsetness.
If they are that advanced, does it mean they could present themselves differently if they wished?
They could. But what they wanted to do with me as part of what Washita was about was for me and them to see each other in their original form. So
right. I see, yes.
A lot of them even go around on Earth disguised because they have this advanced consciousness, so they can create in their aura fields. They can switch to aura fields to make themselves look like anything, so they can make themselves look human or whatever.
Right. So that's probably caused a little bit of conflict between people who claim they've seen certain entities from a particular civilization, and they end up coming with different descriptions.
Right. They do. That's the problem, because what they try to do is become as pleasing to whoever they're working with as possible, unless they see that they don't have to. In my case, they don't have to, as happened when I did your galactic neighbors, which is a lot of creatures from different parts of the galaxy, and some of them were kind of strange, especially the dinosaurians were kind of, because they look like raptors, basically, which are miniature T-Rexes. So when you have that staring at you, like I said, you have this 10-second moment.
when you feel like running.
Right, and you say, this is an advanced being, and it's got these huge teeth and looks just like the most dangerous creature in the history of the planet. You got to be kidding. And then you see you're absolutely wrong.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about physical angels, because I believe you were given the history of the angels in this galaxy. Would I be correct in thinking that was through one chief guide, Sandra?
Repeat that again, Mike?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name now of one who you described, I think, as your chief guide. Was it Sandra?
Yeah, Sandra.
Right, and you were talking about maintaining physicality, and we were here to provide heaven with those lessons and experiences necessary to the sacred divine plan. Do you know any more about that one?
Well, basically what they were talking about is how all physical beings that are physical angels are beings that are dedicated to what heaven's divine plan is, which of course is the Creator's divine plan. And their task is to bring that divine plan to fruition in this galaxy. And so that's their main task.
Yes.
And so what they will do is working on going from place to place to carry out and materialize the divine plan.
Right.
That's pretty much what physical angels do in this galaxy.
Yes. So you were saying in your book that about 10 billion years ago, the physical angels were brought into the Milky Way galaxy, and they helped the Elohim in shaping the planetary systems which now exist in our galaxy. Then these must be mighty powerful beings.
Yeah, well, we all are. We are those beings in latent forms of beingness right now. So, yeah, we are those beings. That's something we should realize, is just how potentially powerful and spiritually manifesting capabilities that all of us have when we are, and when we become once again to be fully conscious beings.
Yeah.
So.
Right. What astonished me was that you mentioned, or your guide did, that originally some of these angelic beings were actually thousands of miles in height.
right, because originally when they came in here, they maintained the sizing that they were used to in heaven proper. And of course, in heaven, angelic beings are actually extremely large.
Yes.
Because heaven actually is infinite.
Mm. but I mean, by our impression of size and height, I mean, that is absolutely enormous. But of course, it's all relative, isn't it?
It is all relative, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. I gather that in current times, they've probably changed to about 200 to 500 feet tall. So we wouldn't expect to perhaps see them any larger than that.
And, well, they get as big as they want, but normally in the manifested form in most of this galaxy, the average height is 10 feet or under.
Yes, yes. Okay. I gather there are now two groups of physical angels, and one lot work with the devas, that is, and the planetary devas, to support the continuation of life in the planet biosphere.
Right. The devic forms basically control all the different forms of life, so plant life as well as animal life. And, of course, for us, there's a special set as well as for the cetaceans, because the cetaceans are the only other super intelligent beings on this planet beside ourselves that are native to this planet.
Now, just moving on to another subject here and coming back really to ascension, there are some groups of people that expect Jesus Christ to return. Others believe that it is only the Christ energy. What is your view about that?
Well, the Ascended Master part is going to be coming back, as well as the enlightened energies of the Ascended Masters that will come with them. So actually, it will be a second coming in the physical, but with everybody else, because there's literally tens of thousands of Ascended Masters, of which maybe about 50 to 100 are the ones that people know more than others who really study the subject. So.
Yeah.
He'll be there among others, but I don't hold with the exalted place. The Ascended Masters are the Ascended Masters, and that's how I've always looked at it ever since I've dealt with them.
Right. Now, I think in your book, Your First Contact, you also might have mentioned about people channeling ascension material, and often the name Sananda crops up, as well as beings called the Great White Brotherhood, and I think you mentioned that this includes the Ashtar Command. Now, is it correct that they all participate in this ascension process?
That is correct. They all do. The purpose of all ascended beings is to help us return to full consciousness, which is basically what the ascension process is about.
Yes. And Sananda, I believe, you mentioned, was the Christ light of the Pleiades.
Right. It's more of a galactic one.
Yes, yes. So it's interesting. So the Christ energy is not peculiar to this planet.
No, it's not. It's all through this galaxy. It's not something that is... this is the problem with our religious and philosophic beliefs, is we tend to be xenocentric here. We tend to look more at ourselves as being the center of it all, and not understanding that all the energies out in the galaxy are one and the same in different forms that are part of making sure that this galaxy moves into the light, which is what the divine plan in this galaxy is all about. So I don't really make those differentiations like a lot of other people do. I just don't, because of what I was told since I was a little kid. So that's the way I view it.
Yeah. Now, I think most people who like these sort of subjects that you and I are talking about have all heard of Lord Michael, perhaps to a slightly lesser degree, Lord Metatron. Where do they fit into the creation strategy of the spiritual hierarchy?
Well, Michael is an archangel. He's just below the seraphim, but he's one of the major archangels, and so his task is leading a lot of the councils of heaven in the process of helping to return us to the light. So he has been assigned to that task, and since we are in the midst of doing that right now, as this is what First Contact is about and what the return to full consciousness is, at the core all about. So his task is helping us move through our present problems and into full consciousness.
Yes. So I believe they might be connected with the Council of Nine. So what functions do they serve?
Well, the Council of Nine is a very high council. It's a council creation, and its task basically is to bring forth the good word of the divine plan and to help people understand what the divine plan is all about. So the Nine tend to be around most of the time when I get to talk to them, when something major is about to happen on this planet. So yeah. I haven't talked to them in a while because of that. But we are close to some things, so I'm hoping that soon they'll show up.
Which will be a good sign, evidently, then.
It will be a marvelous. It'll be a marvelous omen. Major,
yes,
number one portent.
Right. Where the inner Earth is concerned, just popping back to that again, while the changes are taking place, is it correct that some people might be taken into the inner Earth for their safety?
Well, the whole problem is that they have to realize it's not just a few people, it's everybody. When we get to the final part of this particular scenario, which is after first contact, when we're ready to become fully conscious,
yeah.
The planet's major concept then, Mother Earth's one, is to change her surface and return herself to full conscious status herself. And so she'll be rock and rolling here on the surface. So everybody on the surface has to either be evacuated or put in another place or put in some place that's safe. And in the case of,
yeah.
of us, it'll be going down to inner Earth. And in the case of a few people who, when this happens, their life cycle on this planet is done, they'll be returned to the ships for their change and then returned to their home world. So, but the vast
right.
majority of us, we'll be down in the Earth where it's safe while all this stuff's going on the surface. And then we'll be fully conscious. We'll probably stay there because that's where fully conscious beings tend to stay, is on the inner world. And
right.
just start the process of opening to the surface as part of bringing forth various nodes, which are the major energy centers of the planet, and helping to do rituals and other related energy work that allows for this planet to maintain itself at its maximum level of life force energy. So we'll basically go into our fully conscious mode as stewards or guardians, whichever word you like to use better, of Mother
right.
Earth and then of this entire solar system.
So would you categorically say that no one would actually be taken up into the craft for the same reasons?
Well, people, as I said, will be taken up if their cycle is done here, and they're going to then be
yeah.
put into full consciousness and return to their home world. So
those
people
right.
that are
okay.
at that level will be returned up to the ships. The
yeah.
other people, which is probably about 90% of us or more here, will be going down into inner Earth to prepare for our stewardships as fully conscious beings of this solar system.
Okay, you're pretty positive about that one. Do you still have a photographic memory?
I wish I did, no.
You haven't, but you used to, did you not?
Oh, I was amazing. I amazed myself. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's one of the hardest things I gave up that I've been trying very hard to return to, and I haven't quite succeeded yet.
Okay. Now, you've been such an interesting talker, and I know you're never lost for words. We haven't reached the end of the program, but I think, in all fairness, I ought to give you a few minutes to yourself to tell our listeners what you've currently got going on the DVD side.
Sure,
so
I would love
to. Yours, as they say.
Okay, for those who are interested, I've got a brand new DVD video out, which is Sheldon Neidl gives you a personalized tour of a Sirian mothership, and we go through eight parts of the ship, and we explain exactly what's going on in the ship, and what we've been talking about here is just kind of like a brief overview of what we do there. We do a lot more, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And that's our newest one. Then we have one on Inner Earth, which we've been talking about, and that's DV720. And so if you go to our website, which is www.paoweb, that's one word, paoweb.com, and just go to products, you'll see all these marvelous products that we have, which is based on all the stuff we've been talking about. You'll see the book, Your First Contact. You'll see your your galactic neighbors, and you'll see our stuff on ships. I have two videos where I talk about the different ships and how they work and what it's like inside of them. It's called Galactic Federation Ships, Part 1, Part 2. I have a whole bunch of materials where I talk about Nisara. That's 7-9 and 7-11 and 7-13, and we talk about the galactic future. And then a whole bunch of things about what's going on our planet. And then we finish up with the later part of the DVDs, which is, like I said, what we've just been talking about, which is about the landings. I have one called Landings 101, and then one about what First Contact is all about, with one called Mission Possible, and then the other two that I just talked about, which is one about Inner Earth, Your Future Home, and the second one that I just talked about, which is the tour of the Sirian Mothership. And you can get those by going to the website, and you can just order. We have a shopping cart there. And if you want to write to us about any of this, you just write to us, PAO, Planetary Activation Organization, P.O. Box 4975, and it's three words, El Dorado Hills, California, 95762. And that's the two ways to get a hold of us, either by the website or simply by writing to us. And if you want to, you can call our voicemail, because for obvious reasons, we don't keep our phone out yet, because we don't have a real office yet. We just have one here in our house. So if you want to do that, our area code is 808, and the number is 573-3110. So that's how to...
Great, yeah.
And then people remember to go to the website, www.paoweb, that's all one word, paoweb.com, and I also have a weekly update, which you can see either on Tuesday night or on Wednesday. So that should cover just about all of it.
Yeah, great. I'm sure you should get a lot of interest. That's fantastic subjects. We've got a few minutes left now, and I'm going to pinch the last one to announce my guest for next week. What would you say to people as perhaps sort of a final message who getting a bit impatient about all these things happening, as they do, of course.
I would just say, you know, remain patient and focused, and know that all this is going to happen divinely and at the right time, and that time, as far as from all the information I have, is not that far off.
Yeah. Would you say, as it seems to be heading that way, that we can look for a start to all of this year?
There's an excellent possibility for all this, because I say the sooner the better. I've always believed that.
Yes,
I expect
yes.
it to be this year, but we will see what happens.
Indeed, yeah. It certainly does give one the impression that it is that close, and the more we hear about the economy in the States, it would seem that it's in dire straits and looks as though it might collapse any day, and I heard the latest news. I think that they're propping up some of the companies that look like going to the wall. So it's certainly happening, isn't it?
It definitely is. The economy is, if any, there was an accelerator for something to get done, it is what is now happening economically, not only here in the States, but throughout the planet. So I have to definitely agree. It has to be. It would have to be, I would think, this year. But we will see what happens, because it's all based upon what's going on and areas of power that we know very little about. So,
absolutely, yeah. Yes, I know it's fatal to try and make a definite prediction about these things, because we all like to do it. We will hang on those predictions, and we get very disappointed if they don't happen. But
exactly.
It is near, so it's not worth worrying about. Well, look, thank you very much, Sheldon, for coming on the program again. I'm sure we could run a whole series of them. You're so interesting, and there's so much we can ask you to talk about. So
sure,
I'll leave you here.
To do this again soon. It would be great.
Yeah, we will book another one for the very near future, indeed. Yes. Well, thank you very much for coming on the program. It was a great interview. So for my listeners, thank you, Sheldon.
Right, and thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Right. You have a great day.
Thank you very much. And
right,
for
bye.
My listeners, I will say that next week I've got someone coming on the program called Win Free, and she was the joint author of a book about the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And there is a website that's been set up by the gentleman who is the current incarnation of Edgar Cayce. And if you want to have a look at that in advance of the interview, you can go to www.caycesback.com, CAYCESBACK.com, and I will be circulating a bit of material about it and also putting it on the BBS radio website. So thank you for being with me. It was an enjoyable interview. Hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all.